Miller's hand went into his robes right by her head. "The stables?" Her mean voice wasn't quite gone. "What could there possibly be for you to investigate in the stables?" Rachel could hear her voice getting louder. The queen was bending over to get her dog. "What are you doing there, precious?" Rachel sucked the hem of her dress to keep from making a noise as she shook. Giller's hand came out of his robe. She saw a pinch of something between his thumb and finger. The dog pushed his head under the robe and started barking. Giller opened his fingers, and sparkling dust dropped down on the dog's head. The dog started sneezing. Then Rachel saw the queen's hand come and pull him away. "There, there, my little precious, it's all right now. Poor little thing." Rachel could hear her kissing the dog's nose the way she liked to do all the time. Then she sneezed too. "As you were saying, Giller, what business does a wizard have in the stables?" "As I was saying, Your Majesty..." Giller's voice could get kind of mean, too, but Rachel thought it was funny when it was the queen he was sounding mean to. "If you were an assassin and you wanted to come into a queen's castle and put a big fat arrow through her, do you think you would rather walk right in the main gate, bold as day, or would you rather ride with your longbow in a wagon, hiding, maybe under some hay or behind some sacks, then come out in the dark of the stables? Well, I... But are there, do you think? Have you found something? But since you don't want me lurking about in the stables either, well, I'll just scratch that off my list, too. But if you don't mind, from now on, when we are in public view, I will be standing well clear of you. I don't want to be in the way if some of your subjects choose to show their love for their queen from afar." Wizard Giller. Her voice got real nice, like when she talked to the dog. "Please forgive me. I've been on edge lately, what with Father Rawl coming soon. I just want everything to go well. Then we will all have what we want. I know you only have my best interest at heart. Please do carry on and forget the momentary foolishness of a lady."
"As you wish, Your Majesty." He bowed again.
The queen started hurrying away down the hall, sneezing. Then Rachel heard her thumping footsteps and the clinking armor stop. "By the way, Wizard Giller," she called back, "did I tell you? A messenger came. He said Father Rawl will be here sooner than expected. Much sooner. Tomorrow, in fact. He will be expecting the box, of course, to seal the alliance. Please see to it."
Giller's leg jerked so hard it almost knocked Rachel over.
"Of course, Your Majesty."
He bowed again.
Giller waited until the queen was gone and then pulled Rachel up with big hands around her waist and held her against his hip with an arm. His cheeks weren't red as they usually were. They were more white. He put his finger against her lips, and she knew he wanted her to keep quiet. He stretched his neck, looking up and down the hall again. "Tomorrow," he muttered to himself. "Curse the spirits, I'm not ready." "What's wrong, Giller?"
"Rachel," he whispered, his big hook nose close to hers. "Is the princess in her room right now?"
"No," Rachel whispered back. "She went to pick out fabric for a new dress for when Father Rawl comes to visit."
"Do you know where the princess keeps her key to the jewel room?"
"Yes, if she doesn't have it with her, she keeps it in the desk, in the drawer on the side by the window."
He started off down the hall, toward Princess Violet's room. His feet were so quiet on the carpets that she couldn't even hear his footsteps as he carried her.
"Change of plans, child. Can you be brave for me? And Sarah?"
She nodded that she could, and put her arms around his neck to hold on as he walked fast. He went past all the dark wooden doors that were pointed at the tops until he got to the biggest one, a double door set back in a little hall with stone carving all around. That was the princess's room. He squeezed her tight.
"All right," he whispered. "You go in and get the key. I'll stay out here and stand guard."
He set her down on the floor. Hurry now. He closed the door behind her. The curtains were pulled back, letting in the sunlight, so she could see right away that the room was empty. None of the servants were cleaning or anything. The fire was burned out, and the servants hadn't yet come and made another for tonight. Princess's big canopy bed was already made up. Rachel liked the bed cover with all the pretty flowers. It matched the gathered canopy and curtains. She always wondered why the princess needed such a big bed. It was big enough for 10 people. Where she came from, 6 girls slept together in a bed half the size of this one, and the bed cover was plain. She wondered what the princess's bed felt like. She had never once even sat on it. She knew Gilla wanted her to hurry, so she crossed the room, walking over the fur rug, to the polished desk with the pretty swirled wood. She put her fingers through the gold handle and slid the drawer open. It made her nervous to do it, even though she had done it before when the princess had sent her to get the key. But she had never done it before without being told to by the princess. The big key to the jewel room was lying in the red velvet pocket, right next to the little key to her sleeping box. She put the key in her pocket and slid the drawer closed again, making sure it was shut all the way. As she started for the door, she looked at the corner where her sleeping box was. She knew Gilla wanted her to hurry, but she ran over to the box anyway. She had to check. She crawled inside, into the dark, and went to the back corner where the blanket was pushed up in a pile. Carefully, she pulled the blanket back. Sarah looked back at her. The doll was right where she had left her. "I have to go quick," she whispered. "I'll be back later." Rachel kissed the doll's head and covered her back up with the blanket, hiding her in the corner so no one would find her. She knew it was trouble to bring Sarah to the castle, but she couldn't bear to leave her in the Wayward Pine all alone. She knew how lonely and scary it got in the Wayward Pine. Finished, she ran to the door, pulled it open a crack, and looked up at Giller's face. He nodded to her and motioned with his hand that it was all right to come out. "The key?" She pulled it out of the pocket where she kept her magic fire stick, to show him. He smiled and called her a good girl. No one had ever called her a good girl before, at least not for a long time. He picked her up again and walked fast down the hall and then down the dark, narrow servant stairs. She could hardly even hear his footsteps on the stone. His whiskers tickled her face. At the bottom, he set her down again. "Rachel," he said, squatting down close to her, "listen carefully. This is very important. This is no game. We must get out of the castle, or we will both get our heads chopped off, just like Sarah told you. But we must be smart about it, or we will get caught. If we run away too quickly, without doing the right things first, we will be found out. And if we are too slow, well, we just better not be too slow." She started to get tears in her eyes. "Giller, I'm afraid to get my head chopped off. People say it hurts terrible bad." Giller hugged her tight. "I know, child. I'm afraid, too." He put his hands on her shoulders, holding her up straight while he looked in her eyes. "But if you trust me and do exactly as I say and are brave enough, we will get away from here and go to where no one ever chops off people's heads or locks them in boxes, and where you can have your doll and people will let you, and they will never take Sarah away from you or throw her in the fire. All right?" Her tears started to go away. "That would be wonderful, Giller. But you must be brave and do just as I tell you. Some of it will be hard."
"I will, I promise."
"And I promise, Rachel, that I will do whatever I must to protect you. We are in this together, you and me, but a lot of other people are depending on us, too. If we do a good job, we will be able to fix it so a lot of other people, innocent people, won't get their heads chopped off any more."
Her eyes got wide. "Oh, I would like that, Giller. I hate it when people get their heads chopped off. It scares me fierce.
All right, then. The first thing I need you to do is to go scold the cooks, just like you are supposed to. And while you are down in the kitchen, get a big loaf of bread, the biggest you can find. I don't care how you get it. Steal it if you have to. Just get it. Then bring it up to the jewel room. Use the key and wait inside for me. I must tend to some other things. I'll tell you more then. Can you do that?
Sure, she nodded.
Easy. Off with you, then. She went through the door into the big hall on the first floor while Gillard disappeared up the steps without making a sound. The stairs to the kitchen were at the other end, on the other side of the grand stairs in the middle that the queen used. Rachel liked going up the grand stairs with the princess because they had carpets and weren't cold like the stone steps she was supposed to use when she was on errands. The hall was open in the middle, where the grand stairs came down to a big room with black and white marble squares on the floor. They were very cold under her feet. She was trying to think of a way she could get a big loaf of bread without stealing it, when she saw Princess Violet coming across the room to the grand stairs. The royal seamstress and two of her helpers were following behind, carrying bolts of pretty pink cloth. Rachel looked quick for a place to hide, but the princess had already seen her.
"Oh, good, Rachel," the princess said. "Come here."
Rachel went and curtsied. "Yes, Princess Violet?"
"What are you doing?"
"I was doing my errands. I was just going to the kitchen now."
"Well, don't bother."
"But Princess Violet, I have to." The princess frowned.
"Why? I just said you didn't."
Rachel bit her lip. The princess's frown scared her. She tried to think of how Giller would answer. "Well, if you don't want me to, I won't," she said. "But your lunch was simply dreadful, and I would hate to see you eating another dreadful meal. You must be starving for something good. But if you don't want me to go tell them, I won't." The princess thought this over for a minute.
"On second thought, go ahead. It was dreadful. Just be sure to tell them how angry I am, too."
"Yes, Princess Violet," she curtsied. She turned and started to leave.
"I'm going for a fitting,"
Rachel turned back to her.
"Then I want to go to the jewel room and try on some things to go with my new dress. When you're finished with the cooks, go get the key and wait for me in the jewel room."
Rachel's mouth felt as if it were stuck together. "But, Princess, wouldn't you rather wait until tomorrow, when the dress is finished, to see how pretty the jewelry will look with the dress?" Princess Violet looked surprised.
"Well, yes, that would be good, to see the jewels with the dress."
She thought another minute, then started up the steps.
"I'm glad I thought of that."
Rachel let out a breath, then headed off to the servants' stairs. The princess called down to her.
"On second thought, Rachel, I need to pick out something for tonight's dinner. So I need to go to the jewel room anyway. Meet me there in a little while." "But Princess..." "But nothing! After you deliver my message to the cooks, go get the key and wait for me in the jewel room. I'll be there as soon as I'm done with the fitting."
The princess went up the grand stairs and disappeared. What was she going to do now? Giller was going to meet her in the jewel room, too. She was breathing hard, as if she was going to cry. What was she going to do? She was going to do as Giller said, that's what. She was going to be brave, so those people didn't get their heads chopped off. She stopped herself from crying and went down the steps to the kitchen. She wondered what Giller wanted a big loaf of bread for. "Well, what do you think?" he whispered. "Any ideas?" Kaelin was lying close, next to him on the ground, frowning while she looked over the edge to the scene below. "I can't even imagine," she whispered back. "I have never seen so many short-tailed gars together in one place." "What could they be burning?" "They're not burning anything. The smoke is coming from the ground. This place is called Fire Spring. Those are vents where steam comes up from the ground, and from other openings water boils up from below, and more over there where other things boil, foul-smelling yellow liquid and thick mud. The fumes keep people away from this place. I have no idea what gars would be doing here." "Well, look there. near the back where the hill rises up, where the biggest vent is. There's something on top of it, something egg-shaped, with steam coming out around it. They keep going up to look at it, to touch it. She shook her head. Your eyes are better than mine. I can't tell what it is, or even that it's round. Richard could hear and feel rumbles from the ground, some followed by great belches of steam roaring from the vents. The awful, suffocating smell of sulfur wafted up to where they hid in the stunted trees of the high ridge. "Maybe we should go have a closer look," he whispered, half to himself, as he watched the gars moving about below. "That would be beyond foolhardy," she whispered harshly. "It would be just plain stupid. One gar would be trouble enough, or have you forgotten so quickly? There must be dozens down there." "I guess," he complained. "What's that behind them, just above on the side of the hill? A cave?" Her eyes went to the dark maw. "Yes, it's called the Shadron's Cave. Some say it goes all the way through the mountain, to the valley on the other side. But I don't know of anyone who knows for sure, or who would want to find out." He watched the gars tearing an animal apart, fighting over it. "What's a Shadron?" "The Shadron is a beast that is supposed to live in the caves. Some say it's just a myth. Others swear it is real. But nobody wants to find out for sure." He looked over at her as she watched the gars. "And what do you think?" Kaelin shrugged. "I don't know. There are many places in the Midlands where there are supposed to be beasts. I have been to many and found no beasts. Most of these stories are just that, stories. But not all." Richard was glad she was talking. It was the most she had said in days. The odd behavior of the gars seemed to have overwhelmed her with curiosity, and brought her, for the moment, out of her withdrawal. But they couldn't lie there talking. They were wasting time. Besides, if they stayed too long, the gars' flies would find them. They both crawled backward, clear of the edge, then crept farther away, keeping their heads down and their movements quiet. Kaelin withdrew once again into silence. Once away from the gars, they started down the road again, to Tamarang, the borderland of the wilds, the land ruled by Queen Melina. Before they had gone far, they came to a divide in the road. Richard assumed they would go to the right, as Kaelin had said that Tamarang lay to the east. The gars and Firespring had been off to their left. Kaelin went down the left road. "What are you doing?" He had had to watch her like a hawk since leaving Agadon Reach. He couldn't trust her anymore. All she wanted to do was die, and he knew she would manage it if he didn't watch her every move. She looked back at him with the same blank expression she had worn for days. "This is called an inverted fork. Up ahead, where it's hard to see because of the lay of the land and the heavy woods, the roads cross over each other and switch directions. Because of the thick trees, it's hard to tell where the sun is, which direction you are going. If we take the right fork here, we will end up with the gars. This one to the left goes to Tamarang." He frowned. "Why would anyone go to the trouble to build a road like that?" "It's just one little way the old rulers of Tamarang used to help confuse invaders from the wilds. Sometimes it slowed them down a little, gave the defenders time to retreat and regroup if they needed to, then to fall on the attackers again." He studied her face a moment, trying to judge if she was telling the truth. It infuriated him that he had to worry about whether Kaelin was telling him the truth. "You're the guide," he said at last. "Lead on." At his word, she turned without comment and walked on. Richard didn't know how much more of this he could take. She would only talk when it was required, wouldn't listen when he tried to make conversation, and backed away whenever he got close. She acted as if his touch would be poison, but he knew it was really her touch she worried about. He had hoped that the way she was talking when they had spotted the gars signaled a change, but he was wrong. She had quickly reverted to her dark mood. She had reduced herself to a prisoner on a forced march, had reduced him to a reluctant jailer. He kept her knife in his belt. He knew what would happen if he gave it back to her. With every step, she was drifting farther and farther from him. He knew he was losing her, but didn't have the slightest idea what to do about it. At night, when it was time for her watch, for him to sleep, he had to tie her hands and feet to prevent her from killing herself when he wasn't watching. When he bound her, she endured it limply. He endured it with great pain. Even then he had to sleep with one eye open. He slept by her feet, so if she saw or heard something, she could wake him. He was dead tired from the strain. He wished they had never gone to Shota. The idea that Zed would turn on him was unthinkable. The idea that Kalin would was unbearable. Richard took out some food. He kept his voice cheerful, hoping to perk her up. "Here, have some of this dried fish." He smiled. "It's really awful." She didn't laugh at his joke. "No, thank you. I'm not hungry." Richard struggled to keep the smile on his face, struggled to keep his voice from betraying his anger. His head was pounding. "Kalin, you've hardly eaten for days. You have to eat." "I said I don't want any." "Come on, for me," he coaxed. "What are you going to do next? Hold me down and force it in my mouth?" The calmness in her voice infuriated him, but he covered it as best he could with his tone, if not his words. "If I have to..." She spun at him, her chest heaving. "Richard, please, just let me go. I don't want to be with you. Just let me go." It was the first emotion she had shown since leaving Agden Reach. It was his turn to hide his emotions. "No." She glared at him with fire in her green eyes. "You can't watch me every minute. Sooner or later, every minute, if I have to." They stood glaring angrily at each other. Then the emotion on her face was gone, and she turned back to the road, walking on. They had only stopped for a few minutes, but it had been enough for the thing that followed them to make another mistake, a rare one. It had let its guard down briefly, and let itself get too close. Close enough for Richard to see its fierce yellow eyes again, if only for an instant. He had been aware that they were being followed since the second day out of the Reach. Years spent alone in the woods made him aware when he was being followed, tracked. It was a game he and the other guides had played sometimes in the Heartland Woods, seeing how far they could follow each other without being detected. Whatever followed now was good at the game, but not as good as Richard. 3 times now he had seen the yellow eyes, when no one else would have. He knew it wasn't Samuel. The yellow was different, darker, and the eyes were closer together. And it was smarter. Couldn't be a heart hound. They would have been attacked long before now. Whatever it was, it only watched. Richard was sure Kalin hadn't seen it. She was too far lost in her own dark thoughts. Sooner or later the thing would make itself known, and Richard would be ready. But with Kalin the way she was right now, he had his hands full, and he didn't need more trouble. So he didn't turn and look, to show it that he suspected, didn't backtrack, and didn't snap a circle, as he and the other guides had called the maneuver, but rather he let his eyes catch the glimpses when they did, without forcing a glance. He was reasonably sure the thing that followed didn't know he was aware of it. For now, that's the way he wanted to keep it. It left the advantage with him. He watched Kalin as she walked with her shoulders slumped, and wondered what he was going to do in a few days when they reached Tamarang. Whether he liked it or not, she was winning this slow battle, simply because things couldn't go on like this. She could fail time and again. She had only to succeed once. He had to win every time. To slip just once would let her end her life. In the end, he knew, he couldn't win. knew he was going to lose, and could think of nothing to change that. Rachel sat on the short footstool in front of the tall chair that was covered with red velvet and buttons and gold carving, waiting, knocking her knees together. "Hurry, Giller," she kept saying to herself. "Hurry before the princess comes." She looked up at the queen's box. She hoped that when Princess Violet came to try on jewelry, she didn't touch the box again. Rachel hated it when she did that. It scared her. The door opened a little. Giller poked his head in. "Hurry, Giller," she whispered loudly. The rest of him came in. He stuck his head back out, looking up and down the hall, then he shut the door. He looked down at her. "Did you get the bread?" She nodded. "I got it here." She pulled the bundle out from under the chair and set it on the footstool. "I took a towel and wrapped it around the bread so no one would see." "Good girl," he smiled as he turned around away from her. She smiled up at him, then frowned. "I had to steal it. I never stole anything before." "I assure you, Rachel, it's for a good cause." He was looking at the box. "Giller, Princess Violet is coming here." He turned back, his eyes big. "When?" "She said after she has the fitting for her new dress. She's pretty fussy, so it may take a while, but maybe not. She likes to try jewelry on and look at herself in the mirror."
"Curse the spirits," Giller whispered.
"Nothing is ever easy." He turned around again and snatched the queen's box off the marble stand.
"Giller, you mustn't touch that. It's the queen's."
He looked a little mad when he looked down at her.
"No, it's not. Just wait and I will explain."
He set the box down on the stool next to the bread. His hand reached into his robes and pulled out another box. "How's it look?" With a smile on one side of his mouth, he held the new box toward her.
"It looks just the same."
"Good."
He put it on the stand where the real one had been, then sat down on the floor next to her and the footstool. "Now listen to me very carefully, Rachel. We don't have much time, and it is very important that you understand." She could tell by the way his face looked that he meant it. She nodded. "I will, Giller." He laid his hand on the box. "This box has magic, and it does not belong to the queen." She frowned.
"It doesn't? Who does it belong to?"
"I don't have time to explain that right now. Maybe after we are away from here. The important thing is that the queen is a bad person."
Rachel nodded. She knew that was true.
"She chops off people's heads just because she wants to. She doesn't care about anyone but herself. She has power. Power means she can do whatever she wants. This box has magic, and it helps give her power. That is why she took it."
"I understand. Like the way the princess has power, so she can slap me and chop my hair crooked and laugh at me."
He nodded. "That's right. Very good, Rachel. Now, there is a man who is even meaner than the queen. His name is Darkon Rall."
"Father Rall?"
She was confused.
"Everyone says he's nice. The princess says he is the nicest man in the world."
"The princess also says she doesn't spill gravy on her dresses."
He lifted an eyebrow.
"That's a lie."
Giller put his hands on her shoulders, real soft.
"You listen very carefully. Darkon Rall, Father Rall, is the meanest man that ever was. He hurts more people than the queen could even think of. He is so mean that he even kills children. Do you know what that means, to kill someone?"
She felt sad and scared. "It means you chop off their head or something and make them dead."
"Yes, and just as the princess laughs when she slaps you, Darkon Rall laughs when he kills people. You know the way when the princess is at dinner with all the lords and ladies, she is real nice and polite? But when she is alone with you, she slaps you?"
Rachel nodded. She had a lump in her throat.
"She doesn't like them to know she's really mean."
Giller held his finger up. "That's right. You're a very bright girl. Well, Father Rall is the same way. He doesn't want people to know he is really mean, so he can be very polite and make it seem like he is the nicest man in the world.
Whatever you do, Rachel, you stay away from him, if you can. I will, for sure. But if he talks to you, just be polite right back. Don't let him know that you know. You must not let people know all the things you know. That keeps you safe. She smiled. Like Sarah, I don't let people know about her so they can't take her away from me. It keeps her safe. He put his arms around her and gave her a quick hug. The spirits be praised, you are a smart child. It made her feel really good that he said that. No one ever told her that she was smart. Now listen close. This is the important part. She nodded again. I will, Giller. He put his hand back on the box. This box has magic. When the Queen gives it to Father Rawl, he will be able to use the magic to hurt even more people. He will chop off a lot more people's heads. The Queen is a mean person and wants him to do it, so she is going to give him the box. Her eyes got real big. Giller, we mustn't let her give him the box, or all those people will get their heads chopped off. A big smile spread under his hook nose. He held her chin in his hand. Rachel, you are the smartest girl I have ever met. You truly are. We have to hide it, hide the box, like I hide Sarah. And that's just what we are going to do. He pointed up at the box he had put on the stand. That is a fake. That means it's not the real thing. It's just pretend. So they will be fooled for a while, and we can get away before they find out the real one is gone. She looked up at the fake box. It looked just like the real one. Killer! You're the most clever man I ever did know. His smile went away a little. I'm afraid, child, that I am too clever for my own good. His smile came back. Here is what we are going to do. Giller took the loaf of bread she had stolen from the kitchen and broke it in half. With his big hands, he scooped out some of the insides. Part of it he stuffed in his mouth. His cheeks puffed out. There was so much. He stuffed some in her mouth. She chewed as fast as she could. It was good, still warm. When they finished eating the middle, he took the real box and pushed it into the middle of the bread and put the two halves back together. He held it up for her to look at. What do you think? She made a face. It's all cracked. People will know it's been broken. He shook his head. Smart. You are really smart. Well, since I'm a wizard, perhaps I could do something about that. What do you think? She nodded. Maybe. He put the bread in his lap and made his hands go all around in the air over it. He took his hands away and held the bread up in front of her face again. The cracks were gone. It looked just like new. No one will know now for sure. She giggled. Let's hope you're right, child. I have put a wizard's web, a magic spell, in the bread, to be sure no one will be able to see the magic of the box inside it. He spread the cloth out on top of the stool and put the bread on it, then pulled up all four corners and tied them in the middle on top. He lifted up the bundle by the knots and put it in the palm of his other hand, in front of her. He looked her in the eyes, and he didn't smile. He looked almost sad. Now here's the hard part, Rachel. We have to get this box away from here. We can't hide it in the castle, or it might be found. You remember where I hid your doll, in the garden? She smiled proudly. She remembered. Third urn on the right. He nodded. I will hide this there, just like I hid your doll. You must go and get it, just like you did with your doll, and then take it out of the castle. He leaned a little closer. You have to do it tonight. She started twisting her finger in the hem of her dress. She started to get tears in her eyes. Giller, I'm scared to touch the Queen's box. I know you're afraid, child, but remember, it's not the Queen's box. You do want to help keep all those people from getting their heads chopped off, don't you? Yes, she whined. But couldn't you take it away from the castle? If I could, I swear to you, Rachel, I would. But I can't. There are some who watch me and don't want me to go out of the castle. If they found me with the box, then Father Rawl would get it, and we can't have that now, can we?
No.
Then she got real scared. Giller, you said you were going to run away with me.
You promised.
And I mean to keep that promise, believe me. But it may take a couple of days for me to sneak out of Tamarang. It's very dangerous for the box to be here another day, and I can't get it out myself. You must get it away. Take it to your secret place, your wayward pine. You wait there for me until I can cover our escape, and I will come get you.
I guess I can.
If you say it's important, I'll try.
Giller moved up and sat on the stool. He pulled her up with his hands around her waist and set her on his knee. Rachel, you listen to me. If you live to be 100 years old, you will never again do anything as important as this. You must be brave, braver than you have ever been before. You must not trust anyone. You must not let anyone get the box. I will come get you in a few days, but if something goes wrong, and I don't come, you must hide with the box until winter. Then everything will be all right. If I knew of anyone else to help you, I would get them to do it, but I don't. You are the only one who can do this. She watched him with big eyes.
I'm just little, she said.
That is why you will be safe. Everybody thinks you are a nobody, but that isn't true. You are the most important person in the world, but you can trick them because they don't know. You must do this, Rachel. I need your help so much, and so does everyone else. I know you're smart enough and brave enough to do it. She could see that his eyes were wet.
I'll try, Giller. I'll be brave and do it.
You're the bestest man in the whole world, and if you say to do it, I will.
He shook his head. I have been a very foolish man, Rachel. I have been far from the bestest man in the world. If only I had been wiser before, and remembered the things I was taught, my true duty, the reason I became a wizard in the first place, maybe I wouldn't have to ask you to do this. But just as this is the most important thing you will ever do, it is also the most important thing I will ever do. We must not fail, Rachel. You must not. No matter what happens, you must not let anyone stop you. Not anyone. He put a finger on each side of her forehead, and she felt a safe feeling in her head. She knew she would be able to do it, and she would never have to do as the princess said again. She would be free. Giller suddenly pulled his fingers away.
"Someone comes," he whispered. He kissed her head real quick.
"Good spirits protect you, Rachel."
He stood up and put his back to the wall, behind the door. He slipped the loaf of bread into his robes and put his finger over his lips. The door opened, and Rachel jumped to her feet. It was Princess Violet. Rachel curtsied. When she came back up, the princess slapped her, then laughed. Rachel looked down at the ground, and while she rubbed her cheek, holding back the tears, she saw a piece of bread between Princess Violet's feet. She took a quick glance at Giller, who stood pressed against the wall behind the door. His eyes went to the bread. Quieter than a cat, he bent down and snatched up the bread, put it in his mouth, then slipped out the door behind Princess Violet's back without her ever seeing him. Kaelin held her arms out to him, hands made into fists, the insides of her wrists pressed together, waiting for him to bind them with the rope. Her unblinking eyes stared off at nothing. She had said she wasn't tired, but Richard surely was. His head pounded so hard it made him feel sick. So she was going to take the first watch. What good her watch was, the way she stared blankly, he didn't know.
He held the rope taut between his shaking fists, his mind feeling the last of his hope finally abandoning him. Nothing was changing. Nothing was getting any better, as he had hoped. It was one long, endless battle with her. She wanting to die, he trying constantly to prevent it. "I can't do this anymore," he whispered, looking down at her wrists in the light of the small fire. "Kaelin, you may be the one who wishes to die, but it is me you are killing." Her green eyes came up to his. The firelight flickered in them. "Then let me go, Richard. Please, if you care at all for me, then show it. Let me go." He lowered the rope and let it drop. With trembling hands he slowly pulled her knife from his belt and looked at it for a minute in the palm of his hand. The glint of the blade was blurred in his vision. He clenched the handle tightly in his fist and jammed the knife in the sheath at her belt. "You win. Get out of here. Get out of my sight. Richard, I said, get out of here." He pointed back the way they had come. "Go back and let the guards do the job. You may botch it with that knife. I'd hate to think you slipped and didn't finish it properly. I hate to think that after all this you might not be dead." He turned his back to her and sat on a windfall spruce that lay in front of the fire. She stood watching him in silence, then moved off a few paces. "Richard, after all we have been through together, I don't want it to be finished like this. I don't care what you want. You have forfeited that right." He struggled to make the words come out. "Get out of my sight." Kaelin nodded, then looked down at the ground. Richard leaned over, elbows on his knees, his face in his shaking hands. He thought he might throw up. "Richard," she said in a soft voice, "when this is all ended, I hope you can think well of me. Remember me more fondly than you do right now." That was it. He came over the log with a boost of one boot on top. In a blink he had her shirt in his fists. "I will only remember you for what you are, a traitor. A traitor to all those who have died, all those who will die." Her eyes were wide as she tried to back away from him, but he held her with a vengeance. "A traitor to all the wizards who have given their lives, to Shur, to Sedine, and all the mud people who were killed. A traitor to your sister." "That's not true. A traitor to all those and more. If I fail and Rol wins, we will all have you to thank, and so will Dark and Rol. It is you who aids him. I do this to help you. You heard what Shota said." She was getting angry now, too. "That won't work, not for me. Yes, I heard what Shota said. She said that both Zed and you would turn against me somehow. She did not say you both would be wrong." "What do you mean?" "This is not a quest for me. It's to stop Rol. How do you know that once we have the box, it might not be me who would deliver it to him? What if it's me who would betray us? And the only chance to keep the box from Rol is for you and Zed to stop me." "That doesn't make any sense." "Does it make any more sense that both you and Zed would try to kill me? That would require two to be wrong. This would require only one. It's just the stupid riddle of a witch woman. You're letting yourself die for a stupid riddle. We can't know how the future will come about. We can't know the meaning of what she said, how it will be true, or if. Not until it happens. Only then can we know what it means and deal with it." "I only know I cannot allow myself to live to carry out the prophecy. You are the thread that weaves this struggle together. And thread can't get there without the needle. You're my needle. Without you, I wouldn't have gotten this far. At every turn, I needed you. Today, at the inverted fork, I would have chosen wrong without you. You know the queen, I don't. Even if I manage to get the box without you, what then? Where will I go? I don't know the Midlands.
Where will I go, Kalin? Tell me. How will I know where it's safe? I could walk right into Rawl's hands, carry the box right to him.
Shota said you are the only one with a chance. Without you, all is lost. Not me, you. She said that if I live...
Richard, I can't allow that. I won't.
You are a traitor to us,
he whispered viciously.
She shook her head slowly. Despite what you think, Richard, I do this for you.
Richard screamed and threw her backward as hard as he could. She fell to the ground on her back. He came and stood above her, glaring down, dust rising around his boots.
Don't you dare say that!
He yelled, both hands in fists. You do this for yourself, because you haven't got the stomach for what victory entails. Don't you dare to say you do this for me!
She came to her feet, keeping her eyes on him. I would give almost anything, Richard, for you not to remember me in this way. But what I do because I must. For you to have a chance. I have sworn to protect the Seeker with my life. The payment has come due. Tears ran down her face, through the dust on her cheeks. As he watched her turn and vanish into the darkness, Richard felt as if a plug inside him had been pulled, and his whole self was draining away. He went to the fire, slid his back down the log until he sat on the ground. He pulled his knees up with his arms around them, put his face against them, and cried as he had never cried.
Chapter 33 Rachel sat on her little chair behind the princess, knocking her knees together, thinking about how she would get the princess to put her out so she could take the box away with her and never come back. She kept thinking about the loaf of bread with the box in it, waiting for her in the garden. She was afraid, but excited, too. Excited that she was going to be helping all those people so they wouldn't get their heads chopped off. It was the first time she had ever felt like an important person. She twisted the hem of her dress. She could hardly wait to get away. All the lords and ladies were drinking their special drink. They all seemed happy to be doing it. Giller was standing behind the queen with her other advisers. He was talking quietly to the court artist. She didn't like the artist. He scared her. He always smiled funny at her. And he only had one hand. She had heard the servants talking before, that they were afraid the artist would draw a picture of them. The people started getting scared looks on their faces. They were looking at the queen. They started to stand up. Rachel looked over at the queen and saw that the people weren't looking at her. They were looking at something else, behind her. Her eyes got wide when she saw the two big men. They were the biggest men she had ever seen. Their shirts didn't have sleeves, but their arms had metal bands on them, with sharp things sticking out. The men had big muscles all over, and yellow hair. They looked like the meanest men she had ever seen, meaner even than any of the dungeon guards. The men looked around the room at the people, then went and stood on each side of the big archway behind the queen and folded their arms. The queen huffed and turned around in her chair to see what was happening. A man with blue eyes and long yellow hair and white robes and a gold-handled knife at his belt, came through the archway. He was the handsomest-looking man she had ever seen. He smiled at the queen. She jumped to her feet. "What an unexpected surprise," she said in her nicest dog voice. "We are honored, but we weren't expecting you until tomorrow." The man again smiled a pretty smile at her. "I couldn't wait to get here, to see your lovely face again. Forgive me for being early, Your Majesty." The queen giggled as she held her hand out for him to kiss. She was always having people kiss her hand. Rachel was surprised at what the nice-looking man had said. He never knew anyone who thought the queen was lovely. The queen took his hand in hers and brought him forward.
Lords and ladies, may I introduce Father Rawl.
Father Rawl? She looked around to see if anyone had seen her jump, but no one had. They were all looking at Father Rawl. She was sure he was going to look at her, and see that she was going to run away with the box. She looked at Giller, but he didn't look back. His face was white. Father Rawl was here before she had run away with the box. What was she going to do? She was going to do what Giller had told her to do. That's what. She was going to be brave and save all those people. She had to think of a way to get out.
Father Rawl looked around at all the people who were standing up now. The little dog barked. He turned to the source of the sound, and it stopped barking. Instead, it began to whine softly. He turned back to the people. It got real quiet. "Dinner is over. You will excuse us now," he said in a soft voice. Everyone started whispering. His blue eyes watched. The whispering stopped, and they started to leave, first slow, then faster. Father Rawl looked at some of the royal advisers, and they left, looking glad to be doing it. A few he didn't look at, including Giller, stayed. Princess Violet stayed too, and Rachel tried to stay behind her so she wouldn't be noticed. The queen smiled and held her arm out to the table.
"Won't you sit, Father Rawl? I'm sure you have had a strenuous journey. Let us bring you something to eat. We have a lovely roast tonight."
He looked at her with blue eyes that didn't blink. "I don't approve of butchering helpless animals and then consuming their flesh." Rachel thought the queen was going to choke.
"Well, then, we also have a lovely turnip soup. And some other things, I'm sure. There must be something. If there isn't, the cooks will make whatever—"
"Perhaps some other time. I am not here to eat. I am here for your contribution to the Alliance."
"But this is sooner than expected. We haven't finished drawing up the agreements. There are many papers to be signed, and you will want to have them looked over first, surely."
"I will be only too happy to sign anything you have ready, and offer my word that I will sign whatever additional documents you may have drawn up. I trust your honesty to deal with me fairly." He smiled. "You don't have any intention of tricking me somehow with these agreements, do you?"
"Well, no, Father Rawl, of course not. Of course not."
"There you have it, then. Why would I need anyone to look over these papers, if you are being fair with me?" "You are being fair, you say?"
"Well, of course I am. I guess there is no need. But this is most unusual."
"So is our alliance. Let's be on with it, then."
"Yes, yes, of course."
She turned to one of her advisers.
"Go get whatever of the alliance treaty you have ready and bring it. Bring ink and pens and my seal."
He bowed and left. The queen turned to Giller.
"Wherever you have secreted the box, go and get it."
He bowed. "Of course, Your Majesty." Rachel felt alone and afraid when she saw him go through the door, his silver robes flying behind him. While they waited, the queen introduced the princess to Father Rawl. Rachel stood behind Princess Violet's chair after she went to have her hand kissed. Father Rawl bowed to her and kissed her hand and told her how she was as pretty as her mother. The princess grinned and grinned and held the hand he had kissed to her breast. The advisor came back with his helpers. They each carried armfuls of papers. They moved plates aside and laid the papers all over the head table, pointing to where the queen and Father Rawl should sign their names. One of the helpers dripped red wax on the papers, and the queen pressed her seal into it. Father Rawl said he didn't have a seal, and that his written name would do, but he was sure he would recognize his own writing in the future. When Giller came back, he stood off to the side and waited until they finished. The men started gathering up all the papers, arguing with each other about which order they went in. The queen motioned Giller forward.
"Father Rawl, Giller said with his finest smile. May I present you with Queen Melina's box of Orden? He held the fake box out in both hands, careful, just as if it were the real one. The jewels all sparkled real pretty. Father Rawl smiled a little smile as he reached out and carefully lifted the box from Giller's hands. He turned it around a minute, looking at the pretty jewels. Then he motioned one of the big men with all the muscles to come forward. When he did, Father Rawl looked him in the eye and handed him the box. With one hand, the man squeezed the box. It shattered. The queen's eyes got real big.
"What is the meaning of this?" she asked.
Father Rawl's face got scary-looking. "That would be my question, Your Majesty. This box is a counterfeit."
"Why, that's simply not possible! There is no way! I know for a fact!" The queen turned her head to Giller. "Giller! What do you know of this?"
He held his hands in the opposite sleeves of his robes. Your Majesty, I don't understand. No one has tampered with the magic seal. I saw to that myself. I assure you this is the same box I have guarded ever since you put it in my hands. It must have been a fake from the first. We have been tricked. That is the only possible explanation. Father Rawl's blue eyes stayed on the wizard the whole time he talked. Then they slid to one of his men. The man came and grabbed the robes at the back of Giller's neck. He lifted Giller off the ground with that one hand.
"What are you doing? Let go of me, you big ox! Have respect for a wizard or you will regret it, I can assure you!"
His feet were dangling in the air. Rachel had a lump in her throat, tears in her eyes. She tried to be brave and not cry. She knew that if she did, they might notice her. Father Rawl licked his fingertips. Not the only possible explanation, wizard. The real box has magic, a particular type of magic. The magic of this box is wrong. A queen would not be able to see it, to know if it was the real box. But a wizard would. Father Rawl smiled a small smile to the queen. The wizard and I are going to go now and have a private conversation. He turned and walked out of the room, white robes flying behind him. The man holding Giller up in the air followed Father Rawl. The other man stepped in front of the door and folded his arms. Giller's feet didn't touch the ground as he was carried away.
Rachel wanted to run after Giller. She was so scared for him. She saw his head turn back and look at the people. His dark eyes were wide, and for a second, they looked right at her, right into her eyes. When they did, she heard his voice in her head, as clear as if he had yelled to her. The voice in her head screamed only one word. "Run!" Then he was gone. Rachel wanted to cry. Instead, she sucked the hem of her dress. All the people around the queen started talking at once. James, the court artist, started picking up some of the pieces of the fake box, turning them over in his one hand, looking at them, holding them against the stump of his other. Princess Violet took one of the big pieces from him and looked at the jewels, running her fingers over them. Rachel kept remembering the voice in her head, Giller's voice, yelling at her to run. She looked around. No one was paying any attention to her. She went around the tables, keeping her head down, below the tabletops, so they wouldn't be able to see her. When she got to the other side of the room, she poked her head up to see if anyone was looking. They weren't. She reached up and took some food off the plates. A piece of meat, 3 bread rolls, and a big piece of hard cheese. She stuffed them all in her pockets, then checked the people again. Then she ran for the hall. She kept herself from getting tears, to be brave for Giller. Her bare feet ran down the carpets, past the picture rugs hanging on the walls. Before she got to the guards at the doors, she slowed down, so they wouldn't see her running.
When they saw her coming, they pulled up the big bolt and didn't say anything as she went through the door. The guards on the outside of the door